Coming up on today's episode of the St. Petersburg Foodies Podcast.
This is really funny. I sort of have a trifecta of evil in food for me. And you're going to laugh when I tell you what it is. It's pickles, mustard, and mayonnaise. I won't touch them, but there's a caveat to this. Okay. So before you get all up in arms.
As far as pickles, do you like other pickled items? Like we're talking about like normal, when people say pickles, they're normally talking about pickled cucumbers.
Yeah. A big giant dill pickle is sort of, I feel like I'm being bludgeoned. Christmas, when I was 10 years old, it was Christmas. My parents got me a guitar and I was really bad for a very long time. And then at some point I started being less bad and I was less bad for a very long time. And I'm sort of just now starting to feel like I can play a little bit on this thing.
So you have 13 albums out, is that correct?
I have no idea.
Well, that's how many I counted on your website.
Coming to you from St. Petersburg, Florida, you're listening to the St. Petersburg Foodies Podcast, the show that's the authority on where to eat in St. Pete. Here are your hosts, Kevin Godby and Lori Brown.
Hi, I'm Kevin Godby.
And I'm Lori Brown. Thank you for tuning in today.
Welcome to the St. Petersburg Foodies Podcast, the podcast that's it when it comes to restaurants and food information in St. Pete.
And be sure to check out our website, stpetersburgfoodies.com. There you'll find great information, including restaurant reviews, the largest St. Pete happy hour list ever created and kept updated, and information on the newest restaurants in town. We are locals that live in downtown St. Pete, and we've been eating our way through this town for years, so you don't have to, but you should.
We have a new episode every Tuesday. Just hit the subscribe button and you'll get notified when an episode is ready for download. And then you can listen to them anytime you want, like on your morning jog or commute to work.
On today's show, our featured guest is international jazz artist, Nate Najjar.
Nate has 13 albums out, has toured the world, is a total foodie, and was born, raised, and lives in St. Pete.
After Nate, we'll check out the latest, tastiest new salads at Greenstock, one of our favorite places for lunch.
We have a great show, so stick around. Ramen is the ultimate comfort food, and Booyah Ramen on the 900 block of Central Avenue is my go-to. It's so freaking good. The broth is like a silky blanket to warm up your mouth, and the hearty proteins, or just mushrooms for vegetarians, it'll have you saying, "Ooh, mommy, the umami is making my eyes roll back in my head." My favorites are the pork belly and the short rib. Mmm. And then there's the noodles. O-M-G. Go get the best ramen in St. Pete at Booyah Ramen at 911 Central Avenue in the Edge District of downtown St. Pete.
Do ya, Booyah? Hey foodies, do you know about the Zest podcast? If you're listening to us, you should be listening to them too.
They're part of the Tampa NPR station WUSF 89.7. On the Zest, you'll learn new recipes, baking tips, and barbecue secrets. You'll hear about what's ripe, what's growing, and what's in season.
The Zest podcast is hosted by Robin Sussingham, an award-winning reporter and producer, who's also an avid home cook and baker. Robin's a native Floridian and has been searching out flavors and the fascinating stories behind them from Key West to Pensacola.
Learning to care for a sourdough starter and learning to bake sourdough breads really speaks to people in a very deep way. It's part of our collective history, and we're getting back to our roots and our self-sufficiency.
Just like us, the Zest podcast does interviews with chefs and restaurateurs and talks about food and recipes covering the Tampa Bay area and throughout Florida.
It's what we listen to when we're not doing our own show. Check out the Zest podcast at thezestpodcast.com.
Please welcome international recording artist, local St. Pete resident, and fellow foodie, Nate Najjar. Welcome, Nate.
Welcome, Nate.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, Lori. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you have a nice voice, but you don't sing much, do you?
You do not want to hear me sing. It's funny I say that, but if I drink too much during the intermission, I might sing a song on the second half of the show. A very limited repertoire of things that seemingly, you know, I don't know if they actually work, but seemingly they work because of what the material is and not because of my singing.
Yeah, you just have this really like calm and soothing voice.
It's soothing.
Voice.
It's very soothing.
You could be a doctor, I think.
Yeah. Oh, that's pretty good. The reality is I just got up and I should still be sleeping, but.
Oh, no, sorry about that.
You're getting my midnight voice, to be honest.
Yeah, and speaking of shows, and we'll go into the details later, but you have I think it's an annual show. Don't you do it every year?
Yes, this is, I think this is the 13th year we've done it. But I'm not sure. I'd have to go back.
So it's your Christmas show coming up at the Palladium.
Nate Najar's Jazz Holiday.
Jazz Holiday.
Nice. And James Suggs is in that too, right?
Yep. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. We know James from Gloria West.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was December 11 at the Palladium.
Yes, and that's a Friday at 7:30, and we'll remind everybody about that later on as well.
Yes.
Yeah, we know James from Gloria West. I was one of two executive producers on her album that set a world record for how long it took to make.
James would vouch for that.
Yeah, we were actually we sat in on a studio session recording with James one day.
Oh, very
So Nate, you are well known for playing a nylon string acoustic in the classical method. And lately you've been playing a lot of bossa nova style music. But when I see or hear your name, the first thing that immediately pops into my head is It's a Good Day from the Until Now album.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. You know, a lot of people mention Groove Me, which came out about a year after Until Now. That was a thing I did with Melba Moore. And
right.
It was that peaked at number 8 on Billboard. That was a top 10 Billboard hit. So,
nice.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's still paying my condo fee.
Nice.
That's great.
I love when that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good day probably for me because it was probably the first song I heard from you, I think.
Oh, wow.
So before you tell your story, I want to tell a quick little story about how this interview came about. So as I said, I originally heard your music like over 10 years ago, just passively listening to the smooth jazz station in the car. Mm-hmm. Now, fast forward to 2017, I see that you're doing the holiday jazz show at the Palladium. And then I find out that you live in St. Pete. I'm like, whoa, how cool is that? So we went to the Christmas show.
We did.
Loved it.
Oh, wow.
And then I friended you on Facebook and you accepted my request. I'm like, now I have a way to get to Nate. So now to the present. So I've actually had your name on my list of potential podcast interviews for almost a year.
Wow.
Why so long? Because we need to be able to have some food conversations for this show. And I didn't know if you were into food. So now back in October, I posted the 10 best salads and you were the first to comment and it went like this. Nate Najar, nice list. Those all look inviting. My favorite salads in town are first and foremost those I make at home and then those at Mickey's Cafe and Organics. My biggest gripe with eating salads out is that I'm not a fan of the American trend of gloppy and thick dressing. I always prefer subtle, lightly dressed salads that are tossed in a way that the ingredients are just lightly and evenly coated. If you've ever had my Caesar or my traditional vinaigrette, you won't want anything else. And I was like, okay, time to ask him for an interview.
That sounds a little egotistical, but I love my salads. I'm protective of my salads.
I'm the same way, actually. Kevin says I make the best salads.
Yeah. I'll have one sometime.
You guys could have a salad.
We could have a salad off. Yeah,
it's not a competition. It's a
right.
What we're doing is we are just all together enjoying this beautiful real food together. That's right. What we're doing.
Exactly.
Yeah, we've always been into salads, but we've been getting into them even more lately. We recently got a membership at Brick Street Farms. I don't know if you've ever had their stuff.
They used to sell their stuff over at Locale, so I'd pick it up sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
With a pinch.
Well, you know, they're now in Publix.
Oh, that's wonderful.
You can get their lettuce in Publix.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things I really like about it is that it lasts a long time.
It does. And you don't have to wash it.
Right.
That's because it wasn't trucked from, you know, halfway around the world to get here. So it's...
Right.
It lasts that much, whatever transit time the other stuff in the grocery store takes. That's what. That's how much longer it's going to last here.
Right. Yeah.
And lately for dressing on our salads, we've just been doing really good Italian DOP olive oil and red wine vinegar.
Red wine and salt and pepper,
that's,
yeah.
That's a salad dressing. That's mm-hmm. perfect.
So, vinaigrettes. So you prefer an unstable emotion...
Emotional?
Yeah, it's easy for me to say. Emulsion. Where, you know, because oil and vinegar, you have to shake it to mix it up.
Right.
And then the dressings that are stable emulsions are due to the presence of a protein, i.e. mayonnaise.
Ah.
And I got that from my online culinary course, ruby.com.
Well, I'll tell you, you don't need to use mayonnaise. And you know, it's funny. I have a, this is really funny. I sort of have a trifecta of evil in food for me. And you're going to laugh when I tell you what it is. It's pickles, mustard, and mayonnaise. I won't touch them, but there's a caveat to this. Okay. So before you get all up in arms, caveat to this, but pickles, mustard, and mayonnaise, I won't touch. And it's an irrational fear that stems from my childhood where I had it, not at the same time, of course, but those were three things that for one reason or another, when I had them, they were presented in such a way that was just really scarred me emotionally. But, you know, like, for instance, I know a lot of people really like that, you know, bright yellow American, like Hellman's bright American mustard. And it's, I can't do it. And mayonnaise, you know, a lot of people just, you know, I've seen people eat out of the jar of mayonnaise. And
that's a little much.
Yeah, that's a little crazy.
Ew, gross.
So, like, I won't use mayonnaise that you know, that you would buy. But, and I say I don't eat mayonnaise. But, for instance, when I make a Caesar salad, there's mayonnaise in it. It's just I made it when I made the salad. It's
right.
part of the whole process. But back to the vinaigrette, you don't necessarily need mayonnaise to bind it together because, and like I said, I don't like mustard, but the perfect mustard for it is the ancient whole grain Dijon mustard. And that binds together the oil and the vinegar and the lemon, you know, it binds your base and your acid together in a way to create the perfect emulsion for your vinaigrette. But there's other ingredients in the vinaigrette besides just the oil and vinegar and mustard, although it is a very simple process. So,
mm-hmm. Wow.
Do you use any aromatics or herbs?
Sometimes, it depends what I have on hand. We don't usually have them on hand. So, not necessarily, but like with an Italian thing, I'll do oregano or basil or something. If you chop up some basil really fine and a little oregano and put that in with what you were describing, you know, the red vinegar and and some good olive oil, then that can be pretty hip. You know what I found with salad dressings, or not even with salad dressings, just with any time that you're going to use olive oil. And I discovered this a very long time ago, and I was really proud of myself when I discovered it. It was that, you know, you go to the store and you buy olive oil and, you know, you could even buy the expensive one and they, you know, they taste all different. But one day I had a really exquisite olive oil and it was an accident. I was at the Lebanese market up on 54th Avenue. We're Arabs. And so we go to the Lebanese market, we buy fresh pita bread, we buy tabbouleh, things like that. Right. So, and I saw they had these giant jars of olive oil and they were pretty back in, I don't know what they cost now, but back then they were like $8 for a huge, like 32 ounces. You know? Mm-hmm. So I was like, why is this? So let me try this. And so I bought this and I tried it and it was exquisite. And I looked at it and this particular olive oil was Palestinian. But the key that I discovered was that it was all, the olives were all from the same place. Not the same region,
cool.
From the same place, right?
Oh, wow.
So then I tried a Lebanese olive oil, was the same thing. So that when I went to the Publix, I started looking at the jar, at the bottles of olive oil to see where they come from. And a lot of them, even the expensive ones with the fancy labels, but they're still kind of big market products type, those ones, they'll say may contain oils from these locations. And then it just,
right.
You know, so forth. And they'll have a code on it. So, you know, you'll buy like a Colavita, for instance, I'm just throwing something out, or a Vigo, you know, and you look at it and the olives will have come from Spain, Italy, Greece, and sometimes four or five or six different places all mashed together to Starbucks coffee. You know, there's no flavor because it's just it's randomized in a way to give them a consistent but bland product.
Right.
Yeah, we learned about that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they can get olives from all over the place, but then they ship them all to Italy.
Right.
And then they put real big on the label Italian olive oil, but then real small fine print on the back says may contain olives from all these other places. Yes.
Right.
If you get one where it's all Italian or all Spanish or all that, then it's going to have a much more refined sense of real taste to it rather than some bland, slippery product.
Right.
Yeah. Have you seen, Nate, have you seen salt, fat, acid, heat?
I haven't, but Daniela has, and she's crazy about food documentaries, so she keeps telling me to
yeah. There's a whole olive oil.
It's an amazing documentary. We've watched it at least three or four times. I can't even remember how many times. But last year for Christmas, Kevin bought me the olive oil from that actual episode, and it's all from Liguria, and it was exquisite.
You can't get it anymore, so don't even try.
Oh wow. Okay, well, that sounds great. Yeah, so that's when I found that out, that was really hip. And now it's easy to buy olive oil because it doesn't have to be this one. It just has to be, you know, follow certain parameters. And all of a sudden, it tastes so much better.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, really cool.
And you have to pay attention to expiration dates on them because people don't realize olive oil expires.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I just have to look at it when we buy it. We use it so much, it's never going to expire.
Right.
Yeah. Which is good. So just going back for a second. So it's yellow mustard that you don't care for.
Well, like, you know, I'm not going to be slathering mustard on anything because it's just not something I particularly enjoy. But I do use the real Dijon mustard in my vinaigrette because it's a very necessary component.
Right.
So, and then as far as pickles, do you like other pickled items? Like we're talking about, like, normal, when people say pickles, they're normally talking about pickled cucumbers.
Yeah. A big giant dill pickle is sort of, I feel like I'm being bludgeoned if I eat one. So I'm, but you know, like, you know, pickled, well, for instance, you know, in Lebanese cuisine, you know, there's all kinds of pickled vegetables that happen as accoutrements to the to everything. And you have pickled radishes and pickled onions and things like that. And of course, yeah, I'll eat those all day long.
Right.
You know, I have to sadly admit that I am unfamiliar with Lebanese cuisine. Can you enlighten me a little?
I promise you, you're not unfamiliar with it. If you've eaten bouli, if you've eaten pita bread, if you've eaten hummus, you've eaten Lebanese cuisine. If you've ever had a falafel, you've eaten Lebanese cuisine.
Baba ganoush?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, I have to take that back then.
Yeah, it's Mediterranean. It's very Mediterranean. Just
there's a lot more to it. There's certain, you know, some of the seafood dishes and the preparations and stuff are just amazing. But basically, yeah, it's you know, it's hummus and pita and tabbouleh and all that good stuff.
Right.
So if I want to make a main dish, what are a couple ideas of something I should learn to make?
We don't do it in this household anymore because Daniela and the kids are vegetarian, but, you know, like a lamb, there's a million different ways to do lamb. It's very, very common. There's all kinds of shrimp and fish type dishes. There's kefta is a very, very common dish, which is, it's basically meatballs. You know how you make meatballs by taking the meat and the other things and kind of, I don't want to say mushing it all together, but you know, you create a,
you kind of do, yeah.
And then so kefta is the same thing, except they're not balls. They're usually made into sticks and you know, pine nuts and spices and some other aromatics. And there's other things in it. And it's usually lamb or lamb and beef. But the basic concept of kefta is a meatball and it's delicious.
Okay. Yes. We're going to have to make that.
We've seen it on an Anthony Bourdain episode, I believe. Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. They went to Lebanon right when that whole six-day thing
happened. Oh, right.
Right.
Yeah, you saw them running, yeah.
Yeah.
So you've done national and international touring. Any favorite places with great cuisine?
Well, I'm not going to I'm not going to answer that one precisely like that yet, because I'm going to say one of the places I went that I didn't know much about and was really surprised at how good the cuisine was is when I went to Australia.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Interesting. We did a week in Melbourne, Australia. Mm. And it's nice. Those kinds of gigs don't really happen anymore. This kind of before my time back in the day, those gigs were that type of gig is what jazz artists did for decades in terms of gigs, where you'd go and you'd play a room for 8 shows. You'd be there for a whole week.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, 2 shows a night or something, or 2 shows on the weekend and 1 during the week, et cetera, depending on the type of town you're in. But so you kind of post it up and you got to get to know a town and hang out and you get your little route and so forth. And apparently Melbourne, Australia is a real food town. And, mm-hmm. Cool. It was incredible. I could not believe how good. And of course, the variety was amazing. And that's kind of, Australia, it's underneath Southeast Asia. So there was a great deal of Asian influence in the food. But we had Malaysian food and Indonesian food, some exquisite Chinese food. But
in Australia?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's cool.
The best Chinese food I've had is in London, and it's not because it's in London, but you know, major cities have real restaurants, of course, and so there's a couple of places in London that I prefer to go to. Like if I'm thinking Chinese, I'm going to this place in Queensway called which is like Notting Hill almost, called Camtong, and it's just an incredible Cantonese restaurant. You know, it's your regular, you know, the ducks are hanging in the window, that kind of thing. You know?
That's awesome.
There's 20 places like it in New York. You know, and I've eaten at very good places in New York, but this one in London I really prefer. And there's a Szechuan place over by King's Cross that's really amazing. And so, yeah, but the big cities the big cities, especially outside of the United States, have exquisite Chinese food, I've found. And so I tend to seek it out when I'm on tour.
Yeah, I don't blame you because we don't have it here.
We don't have it here, that's for sure.
So, Nate, we're going to take a quick break, pay some bills, and then we'll come back and we're going to get a little more on your background, talk some music, and some more food too. We'll be right back.
St. Pete is all about local, and this year we celebrate a local legend's 25th anniversary. Roland Oates Market and Cafe was founded in July of 94 by Bert Swain and Larry Schwartz. From the beginning, Roland Oates has made a commitment to provide St. Pete customers with the finest quality organic whole foods, nutritional supplements, and body care products at the most reasonable prices possible. And now they have a South Tampa location too. We go there for many items, but they are the only place that we go to buy our raw probiotics and other supplements. They have the best organic whole food selection in town, and on the flip side of that, they also offer a fantastic selection of wines and an unparalleled selection of local craft beer. Roland Oates has a cafe open daily which offers delicious sandwiches, burgers, soups, salads, bowls, wraps, entrees, and fresh-made smoothies, along with a variety of prepared and packaged take-home meals located in the market itself. Do you pride yourself with supporting local businesses? Well, put your money where your mouth is and get on into Roland Oates today.
Roland Oates St. Pete is located at 2842 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Street North. And in South Tampa, you'll find them at 1021 North MacDill Avenue. Check them out on the web at rolandoates.com.
That's rollinoates.com. And Roland Oates offers online ordering with curbside pickup.
Hey, Lori, have you ever been to Noble Crust?
I have.
What do you like there?
Pork belly, pimento cheese, and fried green tomatoes are my favorite.
Oh yeah, I love that one too. They actually call it the FGBLT. It's fried green tomatoes, pork belly glazed with a Tabasco honey sauce and pimento cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first item on the menu, so you can't miss it. And I think they should actually call it the OMG.
Yeah, you've said that before. The chicken marsala is really good too. It has chicken and chicken sausage, crimini mushrooms, and 4 cheese grits. It's so delicious.
I love that they mix classics from the American Deep South and Italy. Noble Crust is famous for their fried chicken.
I love it.
Yeah, and the eggplant parmesan is out of this world. When we do a best eggplant parm list, it'll definitely be on there.
Yes, it will.
Speaking of lists, Noble Crust made 6 of them recently. best Italian, best casual dining, best pizza, best Bloody Marys, best meatballs, and, believe it or not, best salads.
Ooh, can I tell you another one of my favorite items?
Yeah.
The spaghetti and meatballs. It's so good.
Man, you're not kidding. You know what? They have a brunch on Saturdays and Sundays starting at 10:30, which I love. And the deviled eggs are to die for.
Let's go to Noble Crust right now.
I'm in. Let's do it.
We are back! We are back!
We are back with jazz recording artist Nate Najjar. And Nate, did you grow up in St. Pete?
I was born here. I am officially an orange.
How cool is that?
Wow, officially an orange.
I was born at St. Anthony's Hospital, which is about 4 blocks from where I currently live.
Right.
That's awesome. Yeah,
I went to St. Pete High School. I was in the IB program. I was in the International Baccalaureate program. I'm probably the only IB graduate in the history of the world that does not have a college education.
What made you decide not to go to college?
The people at college.
Ah, there you go.
We'll leave it at that. That's another story. I was in a music program for about 6 weeks, and then I wasn't. And then after that, I found a gig on Central Avenue playing with a piano player 5 nights a week for $300 a week cash. And my rent, at the time, my rent up on First Street was only $400 a month. So I was.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So when did you start playing music?
I started playing about maybe 11 years old. What we used to do is, you know, because we grew up in Florida, and I-4 wasn't a mess back then. We used to go to Disney kind of all the time, you know? I mean,
so did we. My dad took us all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, that was back before they sold tickets like for each ride. Oh, that's how long it's been for me.
You're a little older than I am.
Yeah, I am.
when I was going there, it was like $20 to get in though. I mean,
right.
You know,
right.
And we went to Disney all the time. And because it was only an hour away. I mean, there was no traffic. It was easy to do.
Right.
And Disney wasn't crowded back then. And, you know, they've got a show on every corner. They got a show on the here, and so forth and so on. And, you know, these days it's somebody singing and dancing and you hear the music. But back then, you know, of course, they didn't have tracks in any kind of meaningful way. And so, you know, all the shows there was a band accompanying every show. And I wasn't really looking at the people dancing and singing. I was always looking at the guy with the yellow guitar playing in the band down. And they said, I want to be him. I want to do what he's doing. Mm-hmm. So for my, I think it was my 10th birthday. Christmas when I was 10 years old, it was Christmas. My parents got me a guitar and I was really bad for a very long time. And then at some point I started being less bad and I was less bad for a very long time. And I'm sort of just now starting to feel like I can play a little bit on this thing.
So I was watching your interview with WUSF, the jazz station. You and Daniela were on there and you were telling the story that when you were 17 or 18, you decided you needed a nylon string guitar, which is one of the things you're known for now. And how come you suddenly needed a nylon string guitar?
Well, I had started taking guitar lessons from a guy who, unfortunately, he's no longer with us. He was very old at the time. His name is Frank Mullen. And Frank has obviously, you know, he's gone, so he's not teaching anymore. But kind of before the generation before me and the generation before that, if you played guitar in this town, at some point you took lessons from Frank Mullen. He was, but he came here from Washington, D.C. in the early 70s, and he was like the epitome of the cool 1960s jazz man. That was the thing. I'm going on a tangent because that's what I do. But so I started taking lessons from Frank. I'm 17 years old, and I knew somebody at school whose dad was a student over there. And Frank was like the guy to go to if you want to learn jazz because he's the real deal. So he accepted me as a student. I went down to his house, and he says, "You have to get a classical guitar." And I said, "Why?" He says, because that's what we do our lessons on. You see, Frank, he learned how to play classical guitar. And even though he was a jazz player, he was studying in D.C. with the great Sophocles Pappus. And the relevance of this story here is that Sophocles Pappus had a school in the it actually started it in the 20s. He had a school in Washington, D.C. for classical guitar. He was a great, great ambassador of the guitar, very good friends with Andres Segovia. And so Segovia would come to see his students a lot, and they'd hang out in D.C. and they'd and so forth and so on. And so Sophocles is like the man of the guitar in D.C. And he had this program, brilliant guy, actually. He had this program where if you came with the GI Bill, you could study at my school for free. So, you know, and all these guys were coming back from World War II and then from Korea, and they were taking guitar lessons at Sophocles Pappus' school. They were all learning how to play classical guitar. And another one of the students at Sophocles Pappus' place was Charlie Bird. And Frank and Charlie were very good friends. You know, they were, Frank was just maybe a couple years younger than Charlie, and they were both in Washington, D.C. And so, and then there was another guy that you've never heard of, but he's kind of Washington royal, legendary in Washington, named Bill Harris. And those were the three guys that were jazz musicians that were also playing classical guitar at Sophocles Pappus' place. Charlie went on to have a really big career. Bill Harris is Washington, a Washington legend, and made some records, but didn't really get a big name outside of Washington. And although he had a club in Georgetown for a while called Pigfoot, and it was a barbecue joint and jazz club.
Nice.
I'm gonna find a video from like the promo video of Pigfoot and send it to you, because it's a good, it's charming. Back to me and the guitar. So I'm taking guitar lessons from this guy who is a jazz guy, but they do the classical thing. And so he says, you get a classical guitar, we do your lessons on this instrument, and you play with your fingers, even if we're doing this, 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 or this. Although we never really worked on technique. So, you know, we play the repertoire and we move on to the next thing and so forth. And that's another story. I had to, later on, I had to do some refinement because we just didn't work on technique. We only worked on music. So, but my concept was refined. When I picked up the classical guitar, I said, wow, this instrument is so poetic. This instrument has such, there's such a thing to the sound of this box. And it's like an orchestra. It's like a piano. It was just far preferable to the steel string plectrum style, you know, where you play with the pick and single notes, or you play single notes and then you strum a chord, that kind of thing. That was, they're different instruments. And I just fell in love with the complete possibilities, and especially the sonority of this box. So, and that's how I found Charlie Bird too, because, you know, Frank told me about Charlie, and I wanted to, obviously I was interested in jazz, but now I'm really loving this instrument. Who do I listen to? And to go a little further down the path, that's how I started finding, I mean, I've been playing Brazilian music for 30 years and no, that's not true. For 25 years, I've been playing Brazilian music. And that was the natural progression. I went from Charlie Bird into Brazilian music where when, you know, to this day, when a Brazilian picks up a guitar, you know, like here, for instance, you know, people, oh, I want to play guitar. You get a guitar and then, you know, you strum it and you sing, you know, whatever song you're going to sing. Right. So down there, down in Brazil, when they pick up a guitar, it's always a classical guitar. That's like a steel string guitar that's the special one, but the classical guitar that's just a guitar in Brazil. So that's all like the folk and the singer songwriter types and stuff. They're all playing nylon string guitars because that's what a guitar is in Brazil. So that was a natural progression, you know, starting to finding Brazilian music. It was suited to what I'm doing.
Right.
Yeah. So you've been doing a show, Love and Bossa Nova, from your balcony of your condo.
Yeah. We do it every Friday night at 7:30 and it streams on, Facebook on my page and Daniela's page, and also on YouTube and Daniela's website. So everybody's got a place to find it, whether they're on social media or not. And that started because we had a concert at the Palladium in Huff Hall on the 20th of March. It was Nate Najjar's Jazz Samba Celebration. I had people coming in from out of town to play the gig, and it was going to be a large band, lots of guests, and a really kind of fun program. And then, of course, the pandemic hit that week.
Right. So,
it was before any shutdowns, but it was obviously the very obvious that, oh, we better cancel this show. This isn't, you know. And I turned to Danielle and I said, why don't we just play like you and I? Let's do something on the, you know, on the balcony and stream it to Facebook. And she said, that's a great idea. And so I did it with my phone. And we had a great time and it was a lot of fun. And we got a really, I'm surprised at how good of a response we got. We got a very, very nice response. So let's do it again next week. And I figured out how to hook my camera up to the computer to get a little better image for the next week. So we did that. And then let's do it again. And then I got a little more sophisticated with the setup. And we missed 2 weeks because of Daniela and the kids getting COVID and me having to be out of the house for so I could play my concert at the Palladium. So we managed to do 30 weeks and then we missed 2 weeks. And then last week was 33 and this week will be 34. And we've done it from other places. You know, we in July, we bugged out. We went up to the North Carolina to the mountains and rented a cabin. And so we did one in the cabin.
So
we've done them from a few other places and we've done a few with the full band, like we did one at the studio at 620 and we brought the band in for that and, you know, they get kind of sophisticated, but yeah, 30,
that's awesome.
This will be,
34.
Yep.
So we've been talking a lot about, Bossa Nova and here's just a quick clip from one of my favorite songs and probably one of the best known ones that's been done by a ton of artists, The Girl from Ipanema. And here's a quick clip of you and Daniela doing it.
Ah, se ela soubesse que quando ela passa, o mundo inteirinho se enche de graça e fica mais lindo por causa do amor.
So you've also, during COVID, the Suncoast Jazz Festival, like tons of events, couldn't really happen live, but you produced some videos so they could hold it virtually. And that was November 20th and through 22nd.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it turned out great. You know, it's the 30th year of the Suncoast Jazz Festival.
Wow.
I've been involved for about 5 years. I advise the board on programming. You know, they basically, I get asked my opinion on artists or on the schedule or this or that. And I say, why don't we do this? Why don't we do this? And then, of course, you know, after I spew my opinion, then my input is over. You know, I'm not stumped. It must be. I say, you know, and then use the information however you want. So it's been really a nice journey to be involved with the festival. And a lot of people don't know about it because it's overshadowed by the Clearwater Jazz Holiday.
Yeah, I was going to say that, right?
Which, you know, the Clearwater Jazz Holiday, Coachman Park, big, major music festival.
Yes.
Not a lot of jazz, but they do a very good job of making sure that they include, a good jazz component, a good crossover component. And I'll tell you the biggest, I realize we're talking about Suncoast and now I'm telling you about Clearwater Jazz Holiday, but I do. I want to say that I think the Clearwater Jazz Holiday does a really wonderful job with their educational outreach, that's sort of their main mission throughout the year. And that's all real straight jazz for the students in the community. And so that's pretty special. But they do overshadow the Suncoast Jazz Festival, which is a completely different thing. 30 years now out on the beach. It's out on Sand Key, the Sheraton Sand Key. It's actually the Sheraton and then the Marriott across the street. Mm-hmm. So check this out. On a normal year, there's four ballrooms, and two bars and sometimes one or two outdoor venues that have continuous music from Thursday night's the opening gala, and then Friday the band started about 11 o'clock in the morning, and they go to about 1 or 2 in the morning. Sometimes the jam sessions go 2 or 3 in the morning in the bar in the one place. Continuous music Friday, Saturday, Sunday in all these different venues at the hotel at the same time. And you just
walk
the hallways of the hotel and you go, what's going on in this room right now? And you check it out and, oh, this band's playing, you know, the big ballroom, 600 seats. And there's another ballroom with 400 seats and there's another act playing. And it's awesome. It's like a little Brigadoon is what it is. Cool. And it's just such a cool weekend, and people come from all over the country and all over the world, and they stay at the hotel, and it's just, you know, and then, you know, after your set, you go sit at a table and somebody, and you know, you, next thing you know, you drank a half a bottle of Jameson with somebody that you never met before, and you're having a great time. It's really hip. So that's what the Suncoast Jazz Festival usually is.
Right.
And it started as like a, what we call trad jazz, or which really the right term is classic jazz. But trad is a term that's been used for a very long time, and a term that's not really, that's not a term that's frowned upon, but tends to be used a lot. It's although it's used a lot less now, is Dixieland. And that's how it started. And then it evolved and kind of started to bring in more contemporary jazz styles, or more, you know, just other jazz styles and so forth. And, and, you know, now it's like a regular jazz festival. It's all jazz based. You know, you're not going to see a rock act or something like that. And that's, but it's all jazz based, and it's mostly swing jazz, but there's still an emphasis on classic jazz in it. And so it's the 30th year to, you know, 2020 is the 30th anniversary, and it'd be a shame to miss something. Right. So I went to Joan Dragon is the artistic director. She's the, well, she's the executive director. She's the director of the festival. And I went to Joan and I said, this is back in July, I said, I have an idea if you want to try to do this. And this was just because I'd been, you know, I'd been in camera world and video world since we were doing our live streams. I said, why don't we do a live stream virtual festival? And she says, how do we do that? I got it. I'll figure it out. And I came up with a couple of options. And the important thing, we thought about selling a ticket, and there was, no, it better be free. We'll get better reach this way. A lot of our corporate sponsors, thankfully, they all decided to keep their money in for this year. So, you know, the bands aren't getting paid what they normally would be paid to travel to Florida and play for a weekend. But at the same time, you know, they did what they needed to do from wherever they were. So what we did is we decided to do a free festival, and every act that we included in this particular virtual festival, we, they got an honorarium. So everybody got paid. Like I said, it's not big money, but everybody got paid. And what they did is you'd record a video of a 45 to 60 minute show, but it has to be a bespoke show for the Suncoast Festival. This is, you know, I don't want a YouTube of something you did last year at some other venue.
Right.
You're making a bespoke show for this festival and send it in. And I assembled everything, and we live streamed it, you know, for the festival week. So you had, you know, so, hey, Suncoast, you know, this is, whoever I am, Dave Bennett, the world famous clarinetist up in, I'm in Michigan right now. Sorry, we're not on the beach in Florida, but here's a concert for you. And so it was really, it was really hip, and I'm really proud of it and excited.
Awesome.
That was a great idea.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Glad that we didn't miss our 30th anniversary.
Right.
That's great.
Right.
So you have 13 albums out, is that correct?
I have no idea.
Well, that's how many I counted on your website. The latest being American Melodies, which came out in the infamous month of March 2020. It's very jazzy, very acoustic, with just you on classical guitar and Tommy Cecil on stand-up bass. And what's cool is there's no percussion, but it's still percussive just because of the way you guys play your instruments.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's, you know, Tommy is Tommy's sense of time is not only unwavering, but it is authoritative. I've played with some fine musicians. I've played with some legendary musicians, and I have never encountered a sense of time like Tommy's. I've been playing with him for 15 years.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it's easier for musicians to understand that. Like you just brought me back to when I was like in my 20s in a classic rock band, and our drummer, we just go faster and faster and faster. I'm like, dude, slow down.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's, you need to have a stable, but it doesn't have to be metronomic. It can ebb and flow, but it has to ebb and flow in a meaningful way rather than, you know, and then there's an articulation of the beat. There's a conversation we could get into about this, but it's not going to be relevant to most listeners. So I'm going to stop myself, but there's.
So before we go, Do you have any favorite St. Pete restaurants?
Oh my goodness. I've got a lot of favorite St. Pete restaurants. St. Pete has done really well in the food department.
They have. We have. We have.
Let's see. So I'd say probably, I think my favorite restaurant in St. Pete is going to be Anata.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Anata, yes.
Definitely up there.
And the other thing is, generally speaking, in a tourist market like Pinellas County, generally speaking, service is like, especially when you get out to the beaches and like those kinds of places, you know, it's not the servers, it's, you know, it's the management and so forth, but there's, right. There is what can really make or break a restaurant that has good food is the attentiveness and the level of service.
Right.
Since day one, I've been consistently impressed with just what a fantastic, and I'm not saying this to knock other restaurants. I'm saying this to elevate Anata in that what a fantastic job they do with service. The people who work there, you know, from the back of the house to the front of the house, that people who work there really make an effort to make sure that the guest has a exquisite experience. And, you know, Anata, it's a beach drive restaurant. It's a little expensive, but, you know, it's not Burns expensive. And yet it's one of the finest experiences you can have in town.
Yeah, we agree with you on that.
Yeah, totally.
So that's for like regular dining. And then like for a cafe, I mean, I'm jumping up and down. I'm so vocal about going to Mickey's on Central Avenue because it's real food, you know?
Right, right.
So Mickey serves is, you know, Danielle has always been very health conscious, and I kind of never have been. And now, you know, because of the influence, I'm starting to become health conscious and I'm seeing the benefits. It's not, you know, to me, it's not about, oh, don't eat that, don't eat that, don't eat that. But just if you're going to eat something, you know, just make sure it's real and it's good and you're not.
Eat the good stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, and I love Mickey's because everything is fresh and everything is real. And also it's reasonable. So
right, it is very reasonable.
And Mickey's a really cool guy.
He is a really great guy. Yeah,
our neighbor actually. You know,
he is. Oh, that's so funny. Yeah,
when we're on tour, he feeds our cat.
that's awesome.
Yeah, so we eat lunch there a lot. But I'm just and then I want to give one other plug, and that is Daniela's sister's birthday. Recently, we went to the Cider Press Cafe.
Right. Mm-hmm. Uh huh.
It was fantastic, you know, and there's only one vegan in the family, and that's the their mother. You know, and Danielle is a vegetarian, and the rest of us eat everything. But, you know, so we go to this vegan restaurant, right? It was fantastic. I could not believe how good this restaurant was.
Yeah, they're pretty unique too.
They're very unique. Yes.
So I really wanted to give a plug for that because I'm just so impressed. And of course you know, we could be here for an hour just naming, you know, restaurants and why they're good. And, you know, then we'll just leave out the ones that we, you know, that are less good than these that we don't go to anymore.
Right.
Right.
And
exactly.
Funny thing is, I'm always asking people this question, and it's like a question that I hated somebody asked me.
Right.
Because it's like, who's your favorite? Which one of your kids is your favorite?
Right. You know? Right.
But so want to remind everybody that you have a show coming up at the Palladium on Friday, December 11th at 7:30. It's a Nate Najjar's
Jazz Holiday.
Jazz Holiday. Thank you.
Nate Najjar's Jazz Holiday.
And the website is natenajjar.com, NATENAJAR.com. And also same on Facebook.
That's it.
Yes.
Nate, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Nate.
I can't thank you enough for having me on. This was, I tell you what, I can't wait to, you know, let's all go to Anata and get a glass of wine and just, you know, run our mouths for an hour or two.
We're in on that. And, yes. And next time we interview you, we'll see if we can get you to come out of your shell a little bit.
Oh, that's pretty good. Keep on
moving. One of our favorite places to go eat in St. Pete is Engine Number 9. They've been a staple in downtown St. Pete coming up on 7 years, and they are famous for their unique and tasty burger creations. As a matter of fact, they are on the St. Pete Foodies list of best burgers in St. Pete. They also made the best hot dogs list, the best chilies, and the best wings in St. Pete. Aside from the food, Engine Number 9 is a great sports bar with lots of TVs, beer, and wine. And you can even get a regular old cheeseburger too, so you can bring your non-adventurous eater friends. Check out Engine Number 9 at the corner of MLK and First Avenue North in downtown St. Pete. Their burgers can't be beat. I have something I want to talk about regarding salads.
Yes.
So we typically have a side salad to accompany our dinner, usually. And sometimes we actually have the salad as the meal.
Right.
And that's obviously a bigger salad. But not all meal salads are created equal.
Correct.
Some have a lot of stuff that makes them not so healthy.
That's
and
true.
Do you know how much crap is in bottled dressings?
A ton.
Yeah. It's a long list of unnatural ingredients and preservatives. And my favorite one is calcium disodium EDTA.
Yum.
Yeah. Google it. Look it up. It's obviously it's approved by the FDA, but they're saying it's controversial.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. So that's where Greenstock comes in. They are a chef-driven, ingredient-focused salad and wraps, fast casual eatery right in the heart of downtown St. Pete. And they're the sponsor for this segment. And that's what's for lunch today. Now, they make all of their own dressings from scratch.
They do, and they're delicious.
In-house, they make them. There's no ingredients that you never heard of or can't pronounce.
Right.
And I don't know how many places can say that.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure there's other restaurants that make their own dressings.
There but are.
I'm sure there's a lot that don't.
Right.
You know, everything is fresh at Greenstock. Nothing comes out of a can. That's the number one rule. And you can see all the ingredients right there in the case. And also in the case, they have another case now that has the butcher shop items from St. Pete Meat and Provisions.
Such good quality.
So you can see all that
yes,
stuff too.
Yes, great quality.
And on the salad side, you can see this bright yellow ears of corn, unshucked. I mean, that's as fresh as it gets. Plump red Roma tomatoes that look really good. Greenstock is what's for lunch today.
It is.
And what did you get, Laura?
Mine was delicious. I got the little green. Created it myself.
Yeah, little green means the smaller
version,
which
correct.
Is not that small, really.
No, it's not. I actually split it into two, but they probably don't want me to say that. But you know, anyway, we always get ours tossed, not chopped, because we prefer our salads that way. Mine today was romaine and kale. Then I had cucumbers, tomatoes, beets, and red pickled onions. And I also added some jicama and watermelon radish. And then for my toppings, I had sunflower seeds and crispy wasabi peas. And then I added some extra delicious fresh tuna. They have the best tuna.
Yeah,
I didn't get any dressing because I just used red wine vinegar, and olive oil is my new favorite these days.
Right. Yeah, and I was busy doing some stuff, so I, of course, trusted you to put together a you-inspired. So they say, so chef-inspired are set items, and then you-inspired is you just pick from their ingredients and make up your own
yes.
salad, what you want in it. So what you did for me, which was awesome, by the way.
It was mine. I forgot to say that. It was great.
Yeah. And like I said earlier, like we get the small size, but it's so big, we usually don't finish it for lunch and then have some of it with our dinner. And this time I ate the whole thing. But what that meant is I wasn't hungry in the middle of the afternoon and needed a snack.
Right.
I'm still good. So I had kale, spinach, cucumbers. And I like that they cut the cucumbers in like small little
yes.
like like triangular wedges. Tomatoes, pickled onions, edamame. What does this thing say here? You wrote this. Peas. What are the peas? I don't know what this is.
Snap peas.
Snap peas. Okay. Peppers. Crispy wasabi. Crispy wasabi was kind of like the
crispy wasabi peas.
It was kind of like the secret ingredient.
Oh, no, they're awesome, right?
When you get that crunch in there, that's one of your tricks when you make salads, too. You put some little crunchy stuff
yes.
in there. Same with the pepitas. And, of course, I had the tuna as well. And I went with the house miso ginger dressing, which is one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites, too.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
So, as I said before, they combined with their butcher shop business, St. Pete Meat and Provisions, and they have the highest quality steaks, chicken, pork, farm fresh eggs, and a bunch of other sundries, and you can buy those right at Greenstock when you're getting a salad. So check out Greenstock on the 400 block of Central Avenue in downtown St. Pete. They are open for dine-in or takeout. Their hours are from 10:30 to 6, Monday through Saturday, and you can order on their website, which is eatatgreenstock.com, and you'll find the butcher shop at stpetemeat.com.
This is Chris Walker, and you're listening to St. Pete Food.
Next week on the show, we'll be talking to Joey Lettet. He is the GM at the new Urban Stillhouse, which is in the Warehouse Arts District, and they have been getting rave reviews, including from us, and they have a really cool backstory, and we can't wait to have Joey tell you guys, because he already told us. If you'd like to send us fan mail, hate mail, or if you have any requests for interviews or restaurant reviews, just send an email to info@stpetersburgfoodies.com.
That's it for this episode of the St. Petersburg Foodies Podcast.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks to our guest, Nate Najar.
And thanks to our sponsors,
Greenstock,
Rollin' Oats,
The Zest Podcast,
Noble Crust,
Booyah Ramen,
and Engine Number 9. Our announcer is Candice Aviles from Meet the Chef and Channel 10 News, and our theme music is provided by the Chris Walker Band.
We'd like to remind you to check out all the latest restaurant reviews, foodies news, top 10 lists, and updated happy hours on stpetersburgfoodies.com.
Please give us a rating and review on whichever app you're using to listen to the show. And remember to share the show with your foodie friends.
Until next time,
may your food be hot
and your bubbly cold.
We're here with Gloria West in the studio, and we have our Fast Five Foodies questions. So, woo-hoo. Gloria, you ready?
Yes.
What's your favorite food?
Pickles.
Pickles.
Does it have to be like a whole meal?
No. So just pickles out of a jar?
Yeah.
How about fried pickles?
I do like those as well, yes.
Have you ever had them at Engine Number 9?
I have not.
You have to. Lori says they are the best in the city.
I love pickles, yeah. I will have to go try those.
What's your favorite restaurant in St. Pete?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I play at Anatta every 3 weeks, and it's pretty amazing.